Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its fourth season. On every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home in the Hamptons to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking up an amazing meal. Join Ina as she crafts a classic cocktail with journalist Frank Bruni and discusses the ins and outs of Yorkshire pudding with actress Emily Mortimer. If you're looking for great conversations about and over good food, tune in to Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, I'm Francis Lamb, and this is Splendid Table Selects, our mini podcast on the stuff that makes us better cooks and eaters. Our presenting sponsor is Bob's Red Mill. They're an employee-owned company that's offered organic, gluten-free, stone-ground products for decades, and they're experts at making healthy taste amazing. Look, I don't really believe in baking season, in that I really don't see why I should be any less psyched to eat a cake in July than in December, but for those of you who do believe, baking season's in full swing. And in our show's home state of Minnesota, holiday cookie baking is a knockdown, drag-out competition, thanks to the food section of the Star Tribune. 15 years ago, Rick Nelson, the paper's restaurant writer, suggested that they have a little holiday cookie contest for the readers. I mean, no big deal, right? A few people send in their favorite recipes, you pick a winner. Well, 3,500 recipes later, Rick and Lee Dean, the paper's food editor, picked 150 of the very best recipes for the Great Minnesota Cookie Book. Sally Swift talked to Rick about their best in show.
Happy holidays, Rick Nelson.
Happy holidays to you, Sally Swift.
So great to have you here. You are our official launch to the holidays with this beautiful cookie book that you've put together.
Well, I'm delighted to hear that.
It's the perfect way to start now that Dory Greenspan has made cookies a fifth food group.
And we're forever grateful to her for that.
We are forever grateful for her for that. So tell us a little bit about how this cookie contest got started.
Well, I'm this kind of huge history nerd, and in 2003, I discovered this archive at the newspaper, and it had every copy of our food section dating back to the very first one on October 2nd, 1969. And
wow.
I started leafing through them. They were so fascinating, particularly in the 70s and the 80s, when there was so much reader interaction in the section. For example, there was one column called Recipe Requests, where you could write into the paper and say, hey, I'm looking for, you know, a new recipe for banana bread, say. And then readers would send in their recipes for banana bread, and they would publish them. And so there was this kind of back and forth pre-internet, you know, exchange of ideas. And I thought, how can we kind of pay homage to that history and that tradition that we have here at the food section? And I thought, why not do a cookie contest? It seemed kind of natural for all kinds of reasons. And I was sitting in a meeting and everyone else kind of nodded their head like, great, as long as you do it. That sounds fantastic. Because you know how that goes.
This could have gone downhill very quickly. You know, it's interesting, though. I have to wonder if this has been so successful for you because you're in Minnesota, which has an intense baking tradition.
You know, it really does. And we're fortunate for that reason, I think, and for all kinds of reasons. I mean, it's cold here, obviously, and so people, you know, like to warm up their houses and bake in the winter. But I think there's also, you know, a tradition that goes back, you know, a century to, you know, the people who settled in this state, you know, from Northern Europe and from Scandinavia, who had that great baking tradition and, you know, and instilled it into their families and into their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And, you know, we're also, this is the place where Pillsbury and General Mills and Land O'Lakes were born. You know, it's where the Pillsbury Bake Off is from. And so I think that all of those things kind of play into the success of this contest.
Right. That's a really interesting confluence of ideas and people and thinking. So back us up and tell us how this contest works. So you launch it every year.
Every year. We start kind of mid-September, and we put out a call to entries to our readers saying, hey, you know, please send us your recipes and your stories, because for us, you know, we're journalists, and so we're really interested in the stories behind the cookie as well as the recipe itself. And after about 5 weeks of that, you know, they start trickling in. Usually within the last 24 hours, at least half of the entries come in. Which is the way we all live today.
So we all work.
Yeah, exactly. And we get, you know, anywhere between 200 and 300 entries a year is kind of what we average. Then we go through that pile, my editor and I, Lee Dean, and we sift those down to maybe 20 or 25 that we want to bake. And we kind of reject things, reject recipes based on all kinds of criteria. One, does it resemble something we've already published? Because, mm-hmm. of course, the goal of the contest is to give our readers new recipes that they've never seen before. And then, you know, I have a personal feeling about the ingredients that go into a cookie. I think they should be whole ingredients. For example, I don't think you should make a cookie that's based on an instant pistachio pudding mix, you know, for mm-hmm. example.
You're a hard one.
And so then we'll select, you know, maybe two dozen that we'll bake, and we'll bake them, and we will collect all of them into a conference room, and we'll sit down with a bunch of other people. We usually have six or seven other judges that we recruit, and we select a winner and four finalists based on a whole bunch of those a whole bunch of criteria.
And that is brutal, tasting that number of cookies.
It really is. And, you know, it's really funny. We just did our 2018 contest last weekend, and we tried 18. And in the end, everybody, you know, everybody has a little plate. It's like the cookie spittoon, where you take a bite of the cookie, then you just put it down on the plate. And there's a big mound of half-eaten cookies that everybody put on Instagram the moment it was over. So,
right. Yeah. I love that. Okay, so tell me some of your favorites from the book.
You know, it's funny because I have a lot of favorites, and I hate it when people say, oh, you know, everyone's
pick
a good
your
one,
child.
Right? Yeah. One that I make all the time, and it wasn't a winner, and it really should have been a winner, was an almond palmier that was based on a recipe. The woman who entered it, she was in love with this almond palmier at a Minneapolis cafe where she would go and buy them all the time, and she thought, how can I make these at home? And so she did a bunch of recipe testing and ended up, I'm using, you know, commercially prepared puff pastry. And at the time we thought, this really can't win because it's not, you know, it's using commercially prepared puff pastry. You know, why did we get up on that high horse?
How
you know?
Smart is that? I think that's brilliant. And for listeners who don't know what a palmier are, they're the ones you see in mostly in French bakeries,
right,
that are almost shaped like a heart, and it's all pastry. There's no filling on it or anything else, and they are buttery and crispy, and a good palmier is like nothing else.
Oh, they're amazing. And, you know, they're incredible. They're so easy to make. And everyone thinks that you really fussed when all you really did was make a refrigerator, slice and bake. You know, it's the easiest thing in the world.
Okay, that sounds great. Give us another one.
Another one that I love is also almond, which is weird because I'm a huge chocolate freak and we have a lot of great chocolate recipes in the book. But this one is called Italian Almond Cookies. And again, part of the reason is the story. It was a young guy. His name is William Teresa, and he was studying at the University of Bologna in Italy, and he was dating a young Italian woman, and every weekend he would go with her to her family's house, and one of her grandmothers baked this amazing almond flour cookie, and he was just obsessed with it. And by the time he left to go back to the United States, he very politely asked her for the recipe, and she very politely said no.
Of course she did.
You know, she'd been baking it her whole life. Her mother had been baking, you know, and it was like, we were not going to give that recipe away. So he came back to Minneapolis, and over the course of many months in trial and error, he formulated what he thought was the best replica of this cookie, entered it in our contest, and won.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I was thinking that they were going to have fallen in love and that it should have really been a Valentine's Day cookie, but
if
I guess
only.
Not. What about a chocolate one? Do you have a chocolate one?
Oh, yeah. One that I've been baking, and maybe it's from our third year, and we've been doing this now for 16 years. She called it Devil's Delight, and it's a kind of a cinnamon, cayenne, chocolate cookie that the woman who entered it, her name is Michelle Clark, she based it on a truffle at a St. Paul chocolate company that she loved to go to. And she's like, oh, this is so good. These flavors would make a great cookie. And she developed a cookie recipe based on it. I could make it from memory. I've made it so many times.
Wow, I love that. Any truly doggedy, doggedy, doggedy ones?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's really funny because our readers are so in tune to food trends and they mm-hmm. incorporate them into cookies. And a couple of years ago when, you know, kale had everything but a Broadway musical, you know,
not kale.
Kale, several people in one year submitted a kale recipe. And so we thought, okay, we'll test one of them. Big, you know, big mistake. Leafy greens do not belong in a cookie.
Oh, that is so funny. Good for them, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, and I noticed thumbing through the book, not to be critical, mm-hmm. but just that some people submit other people's recipes. Like I noticed a recipe for the aforementioned Dory Greenspan's famous Karova cookie, which she renamed World Peace at some point. How do you feel about people bringing in recipes that are from somewhere else?
We feel that that's fine. And here's why. One, we like to tell people we are not the Pillsbury Bake Off. As long as you tell us where it came from and how you incorporated that recipe into your own kind of holiday baking traditions, we're fine with a cookie that someone else made, but that you've made really special in your household. That's how we kind of feel. That's how we get around it.
Oh, my God. You are so Minnesota nice. Happy holidays, Rick.
Happy holidays.
Rick Nelson, along with Lee Dean, are the authors of the Great Minnesota Cookie Book. You can find some of their favorites, as well as our collection of cookie recipes, at splendidtable.org. Huge thanks to our presenting sponsor, Bob's Red Mill. Remember that Bob's Red Mill is a great source for all your baking needs, from whole grains and flours to foolproof gluten-free baking mixes. Bob's Red Mill has you covered. For more information about all their products and to check out their baking recipes, visit bobsredmill.com. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you soon. All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.